It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, President Trump signed a religious liberty executive order today. We'll find out what that means for churches that want to be more politically active.
President Trump signed an executive order today that would allow churches and other religious organizations to become more politically active. The order accomplishes that by directing the IRS to use its discretion in enforcing the Johnson Amendment.
The Johnson Amendment prevents churches and tax-exempt religious organizations from certain political activity, like endorsing or opposing political candidates. President Trump said in his signing ceremony today that religious leaders shouldn't have to risk losing their tax-exempt status for speaking about political issues. Here's a listen.
In America, we do not fear people speaking freely from the pulpit. We embrace it. America has a rich tradition of social change beginning in our pews and our pulpits. Perhaps there is no greater example than the historic role of the African American church as the agent for social progress, spurring our nation to greater justice and equality. We must never infringe on the noble tradition of change from the church and progress from the pew.
Howard Schwaber joins us now. He's a professor of political science and legal studies at UW-Madison. Howard, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, how much do you see this executive order changing things, especially for religious groups that want to be more politically active?
Oh, potentially quite a lot. So the president doesn't have the power to change the law. What he's doing explicitly is instructing the IRS not to enforce these particular laws. It's very much the same move that President Obama made with respect to immigration laws when he instructed the INS not to prioritize the deportation of certain categories of illegal aliens. The result is that, assuming the IRS follows this direction, which I assume that they will, and assuming churches pick up on this news, which I'm sure that they will, I would certainly expect to see an enormous upswing in overt political organizing and political activity, particularly among evangelical and conservative churches, in the near future. There's another wrinkle to this, though, which I haven't heard talked about yet, which is it's important to remember that our Supreme Court has ruled that uses and expenditures of money count as speech. So if the IRS is not going to be enforcing the rules against churches engaging in political advocacy and speech, does that also mean that there will be non-enforcement of the rules about churches acting as conduits for dark money into elections? And there's the potential here for churches to become really major centers of dark money funding.
Could you play that out a little, Howard? How would that happen if churches were to take on that role? And I think you're equating there the money with speech.
Right. Well, I'm speculating a bit, obviously, but in a variety of cases, most recently Citizens United, that's the most famous one, right? The United States Supreme Court has said that spending money is for political purposes is speech. And in the same way that we protect the freedom to express oneself politically, we protect the freedom to spend money politically, both for individuals, for corporations, and so on. Well, we just heard the president explaining that what he's concerned with is to ensure that churches are free to engage in political advocacy. If you put those two things together, that means churches are free to engage in political spending of money. And they can act as centers for the spending of money by their parishioners or by anybody else who wants to coordinate with them. So potentially, and I emphasize, I'm speculating a little bit, but there's a pretty clear potential here for an active regime of non-enforcement to have the effect of opening up churches and religious institutions as channels for political contributions.
Is this something that churches have been clamoring for a long time, or is this something that is coming more from the idea of keeping a campaign promise?
A little bit of both. A lot of churches actually don't like this idea. In fact, 1,300 clergy members signed an open letter on Slate objecting to this proposal. There's a lot of religious leaders who are pleased to see politics kept out of their business. But certainly there are churches, particularly evangelical churches, that have been eager to be allowed to play a more active role in political advocacy on issues like same-sex marriage, for example. It's important to point out that it's almost never the case that a church loses its tax-exempt status. I think it's actually only happened once. So it's not as though there's been this reign of terror in which churches are being denied tax-exempt status right and left. But it is the case that churches may have refrained from engaging in political activity they otherwise would have undertaken, and now that they will feel emboldened to do that. And for the moment, that's mostly the pressure for that freedom is mostly coming from evangelical churches on the right end of the political spectrum.
And the change is, in fact, it sounds like that from the pulpit you could hear an endorsement now perhaps of a candidate, whereas in the past you could have heard about issues and politics in general. How big a change is that shift to the endorsement of a candidate?
In many cases it's not, because we've actually seen those endorsements take place repeatedly, despite the fact that theoretically that should have cost those churches their tax-exempt status. As I say, these rules have never been enforced with any kind of seriousness. But I would expect to see the practice become more widespread. And in fact, one of the things you might expect to see is more and more congregations dividing themselves politically. So there'll be a liberal church and a conservative church, you know, and a liberal synagogue and a conservative synagogue in a given town. If those communities start becoming overtly involved in partisan politics, this could become quite divisive.
And why do you think President Trump focused on the Johnson Amendment in particular in looking at these issues?
Well, it's sort of the one tool that he has. He can't overrule the First Amendment. He can't change the tax laws or any laws for that matter. All he can do is focus on executive agencies that enforce them. And the IRS is an executive agency over which he has direct control. And so he can, you know, issue this order without fear of significant resistance or backlash. It would be much more difficult, for example, to try and order the Department of Justice not to enforce anti-discrimination laws. You know? And the president has no authority to interfere with the enforcement of state-level anti-discrimination laws or restrictions on funding.
We're talking with Howard Schwaber right now, professor of political science and legal studies at UW-Madison, looking at the religious liberty executive order that President Trump signed today.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think of the president's order here, relaxing enforcement of this Johnson Amendment, opening things up for more explicit political activity in religious organizations? Good idea, bad idea? Do you want to see this happen at your church? Would you like to see your religious organization, your religious leader, actively endorsing a candidate for office, for example? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our conversation with Howard Schwaber. He's a professor of political science and legal studies at UW-Madison, and we're looking at the religious liberty executive order that President Trump signed today that would relax enforcement of the Johnson Amendment, which prevents some churches from endorsing political candidates.
Tell us what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you think religious leaders, organizations, churches, synagogues, mosques, other congregations should be able to express political views to endorse candidates, specifically to donate as a religious organization on behalf of a candidate or run ads for them, for that matter? Would you like to see this where you worship? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take a caller now. We've got John joining us in Janesville. John, hi.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
That's good. I'm completely against that. I don't think that religion has anything to do with politics, nor should it. And keeping their money out of it, too. I don't think that that's right. They've got so much money, they can pretty much change any election that way.
John, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. And Howard, John making the point, he thinks that there should be a firewall between politics and religion, which kind of gets at the Johnson Amendment. Could you talk a little bit about what was behind it initially?
Sure. So the idea of a real firewall between politics and religion kind of breaks down in at least one sense, since for a lot of people, their religious principles have a role in dictating their politics. And you can think about that in terms of an issue like abortion, or an issue of like going to war, or of aid to the poor, or of civil rights. You know, in all of those cases, many people form political views based in part on their religious convictions. And so it would be, you know, false to say that people's religion doesn't influence their politics. The idea of the Johnson Amendment and the idea of the kind of firewall metaphor that we usually use, is to try and prevent institutionalized religion or churches or church organizations from playing a role in politics. And the idea there is that you don't want mixtures of those two authorities. You don't want politicians to be appealing for support on a religious basis, so you have the Catholic candidate, for example, in a given race. And conversely, you know, you don't want churches or religious institutions to be identifying themselves on a political basis. If you're a good Republican, you should attend X Baptist church rather than Y Baptist church, you know, that sort of thing. There is an element in some of these laws, like the Johnson Amendment, that goes back to a certain fear of the Catholic Church in particular, an issue that goes all the way back to the late 19th century. So a lot of states have things called Blaine Amendments that limit the use of state funds going to churches. And initially, some of these things were based on the fear that the Catholic Church, which is an organized church, right, in which all the churches in the nation answer to a single authority, from Pope to cardinals to archbishops and bishops and so on, if it were able to participate in politics or compete for government money, would become extremely powerful. And John kind of alluded to that a moment ago when he mentioned this idea that churches have so much money they could buy an election. I don't think that's true in the modern era. I think business corporations have much more money than churches, really. But that fear of domination by religious institutions is certainly one of the elements that was at the heart of this law.
Let's take another quick call now. We've got Ed on the line in Milwaukee. Ed, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these churches want tax-exempt status, but they are political groups on a lot of levels. Hospitals get tax-exempt, and their CEOs make billions of dollars, or millions of dollars. Just get rid of it. Let them have a free-for-all.
And thank you for the call, and do you think Ed is onto something there, Howard, in the sense that this could make things more transparent for worshipers and for politics watchers and those who are watching political contributions and influence?
Well, actually, I think I heard Ed making a different point, which was questioning the idea of tax-exempt status at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a very, very good point there. There's no question that... So the original idea of tax-exempt status was to allow charitable institutions to do their good work in an effective way. But, I mean, he might have mentioned universities, for example. There are private universities, the Harvards and Yales of the world, that are extremely wealthy, tax-exempt institutions. And it's not at all clear by what logic they should retain that status. So the idea of doing away with tax-exempt status as a whole is really, in many ways, quite an attractive one. The problem, of course, is that there are very powerful political constituencies, like hospitals and universities and churches, that have grown up around, you know, with a desire to preserve these tax-exempt statuses, and so it's politically hard to do. But I must say I have a lot of sympathy for Ed's position.
And we leave it there. We're out of time. Howard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Howard Schwaber, professor of political science and legal studies at UW-Madison, and he joined us to talk about President Trump's new executive order on religious organizations and political campaigning.
Coming up after the news, we'll celebrate the 20th anniversary of the storytelling phenomenon, The Moth.
And remember, it is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. You can pitch in, make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, and make a difference along the way at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Support these great conversations. We count on you to help pay for it. Make that donation, that contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.